history have the weapons existed that could erase all human life from this earth? Now, we're inclined to put that out of mind. We don't want to think about it every day, every moment. It's frightening, I know. But there's some things we had better not forget. There is a great significance in this, and all of our lives are at stake. This world is facing human extinction. What's wrong with our modern civilization? How did we come to this place? What's wrong in the world today with all of the evils, all of the unsolvable problems, all of our troubles, all of the heartaches, all of the discontent, all of the crime, all of the evils, all of the wars and rumors of wars and fears of wars, all of the troubles everywhere? What is wrong? You know, there are six major facets of our modern civilization. I list them as education, government, science and technology, business and industry, organized labor, and religion. Now, in one sense, I would put education first, for the simple reason that our modern civilization is precisely what its leaders have made it, and its leaders are precisely what education has made them. They are the product of modern education. I would put religion first, but religion has been shoved somewhere into the background in this 20th century. It's not too long ago when science came along and said that it was the new Messiah. Now we could safely dispense with the crutch of God and of religion. And science was the new Messiah that was going to solve all of our problems and deliver us from all of our troubles and bring us into the wonderful world of everybody having everything that everybody wanted. And of course, that's where the real trouble is. Everybody's been getting everything and trying to get everything that everybody has wanted. But I usually place education first because the leaders in this world are what education made them. And since science came along, it adopted the approach and the basic concept on which it bases everything that it teaches and all knowledge and all approach to knowledge on its theory of evolution, which is 100% materialistic. We're just so much matter. Well, that's true. We are, and we know that. But we came by a process of evolution, by resident forces, no outside God or any such spiritual forces. And we have just developed from perhaps a single-celled amoeba, perhaps from electrochemical action or some other cause. They don't know exactly what actually spawned the first cause, but there was apparently a sort of single-celled amoeba at the beginning. It divided into two cells, and that developed into more. Finally, it was in the warm ocean slime at the beginning, but finally we had both life that was fish with gills in the sea and in the waters, and also land animals that were breathing air. And we've come on down, and we're supposed to have come to the place where man is an offshoot from some sort of species similar to the anthropoid ape. Now, of course, evolution doesn't teach that man came from a monkey. That's an old idea that's been dispelled long ago, of course. But it does teach that we have come from some species of life similar to an anthropoid ape. That, in other words, we came from some ancestor of the anthropoid ape. It had sprung off in one direction, and humanity had sprung off in another direction, and humanity has been on the earth millions of years, and we have been gaining and gaining and gaining as we've gone along. Now, there are a few questions I'd like to poke at people who believe that. Just by the way, one might be, what about this thing of marriage, and what about the family unit, and where people live in a home with a family? Animals reproduce. It isn't merely a means of reproduction. Animals reproduce, but they don't have home and family relationships like humans do. It's altogether different. How, in the process of evolution, did that start? How many million years ago did it start? Whatever started it? So many other things that have come along, how did they ever start? You can't explain it on materialistic grounds. You simply cannot do it. Now, education has simply become entirely materialistic, especially in this 20th century. Well, science came along some, 300, 400, 500 years ago. It had a beginning and a sort of a start. Now, it's true, things have been evolving in the sense they've been either progressing or retrogressing, whichever you want to call it, in a certain direction. There has been change. Change does not necessarily, however, mean improvement. And there's been a great deal of change. It has not always been improvement. But take some of these facets that we have of a modern civilization. Now, in education, a young child starts out being taught what we call the three R's, reading, writing, arithmetic, which, of course, is a way of misspelling it. But, in other words, we're taught the mechanics of how to read and how to learn certain things and how to think and how to gain more and further knowledge, further learning. Now, an edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica, I think it is not the latest edition, but it was of some little time ago, but during the 20th century, an article on education in the Encyclopedia Britannica defined it as the process of education by which an adult generation funnels its knowledge and its concepts of knowledge into the minds of the oncoming youth so that it stamps its culture on its coming generation and it sort of prepares them to think the way the older generation wants them to think. Of course, it doesn't always work out that way because the average youngster is influenced a whole lot more by his peers, the other kids his same age, than he is by his parents, as a matter of fact. But he is influenced to a great degree by education, and especially as we go on to what we call higher education in the universities and the higher degrees today. Now, the whole thing gets down to this. Why do we need education? Why do we need any of these things? We need to learn how to live. And it all gets down to a way of life. I'm going to show you that religion gets down to a way of life. Everything does. As a matter of fact, science and technology. They're merely trying to teach us things that we would like to have and use in our way of life and in our lives. It's the same way with business and industry. It's merely taking things, manufacturing things that people need and that they want in their lives, and merchandising, distributing those things, selling those things to the public, and merchandising them. And there is a certain basic element that has gone through every bit of it, whether it be capital and management, whether it be labor, whether it be religion, whether it be science and technology, or whether it be business and industry. And that is the ability to get for self. It seems that we all want to get something for ourselves. We want to get all we can. We all are imbued with the idea that I love me and I don't care about you. I don't care about anybody but just myself. I want everything I can get for myself. That is the one basic thing that is imbued us all. It's in education. Education has become materialistic. And so we've come to the place today when we can deal with things. Now, man has been able to send men to the moon and back. We're able to deal with the forces of nature to the extent that we can send spacecraft up into space, out of the atmosphere of this Earth, and clear beyond that, and into outer space, clear to the moon and back. And getting back through this Earth's atmosphere without burning up is a tremendous thing. It has taken a tremendous mind, and the mind of man is capable of almost anything. It's almost unlimited when it comes to what man can do materialistically with things. But when it comes to dealing with people, even the same man who can invent great things, the man who can fly to the moon and back, will come back and have trouble in his own home and divorce his wife. And that has happened, by the way. And we can't get along with one another. We can't deal with people. Groups of people can't deal with other groups of people. So today we're all divided. It's male against female today. Now the females are taking over. And the men are beginning to fight back in the war of the sexes. Women are taking over the jobs that men traditionally had. Women want to be as good as men. They felt inferior, and now they're not going to feel inferior. They're going to show that they can do anything a man can. Well, you know, when a man tries to show he can do anything a woman can, he's going to have a hard time showing that he can have and nurse and feed a baby. He's really going to have a hard time showing that. A man cannot do everything a woman can, and a woman cannot do everything a man can, and was not fitted by nature and by birth to do everything a man is. But we are, that is, females want to be as good as males and want to take the place of males. There is a spirit of competition. There is a spirit of competition between capital management on one hand and labor on the other. There is competition between nations. And so we're all divided in that sense. We're divided in the United States because we're mixed up here with black and white. We're all human beings. We all have the same kind of blood, whether we believe it or not. And in the afterlife, if we really make the grade, color isn't going to be the color we have now anyway. It isn't going to make any difference. If we ever really make the grade, our faces will be shining in the afterlife like the very sun, full strength. And that isn't going to be black or white, either one. And yet we can get all worked up about that, and one may feel inferior and going to say, I'm as good as the other guy is. And then the other feels that he's getting the best of him and he wants to fight back. And so there's a very prominent television program going on right now, Fighting Back. You notice I don't advocate that. I just don't. Because the real way that would lead to peace is not competition and fighting back, but cooperation and serving and helping and giving. Now that brings me down to this. There are two ways of living. It's all a matter of how we live. There are two broad ways of living, broadly speaking. Only two general ways of life or philosophies, and they travel in opposite directions. I like to simplify it, and I call the way humanity is going by a simple little three-letter word, get. G-E-T, get. One says, I want to get all I can. And when did you ever find me doing anything I didn't do just for my own interest and for self? That's the way people are. The other I call give, G-I-V-E, which is merely outflowing love. And it's outflowing love, flowing out from self toward others. Of course, the real definition of it is, first of all, love toward God, our Maker. And secondly, love to our fellow human beings. Love toward God in humility and in obedience and in worship. But love toward neighbor, in loving our neighbor as ourselves. That is, we should have as much concern for the welfare of our neighbor as we do for our own welfare, for his good and his welfare. We want him to be well off too. But we would still have concern for ourselves. You know, we each have a self to take care of. We each consist of a human body, say from the neck down, and of a head with a mind in it. And we need to take care of it. We were made to have God-centeredness, which is outflowing love, in kindness, in serving, in helping, in cooperation, in giving. And the more you give, the more you have. It was Jesus Christ who said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. In other words, he was simply proclaiming the way of give as opposed to get. We want competition in this world, and so I just give you that little bit of competition. Give is versus get. And the one is opposed to the other. But this world is on the get side. And that's where all of his troubles come from. All of the troubles, all of the woes, every evil in this world that man can't solve is coming from the way of get. Now, the thing that people don't understand is this. Both give and get, the two ways of life, are spiritual in nature. They are spiritual ways, spiritual in nature. And we can't solve them and we can't use them. We don't understand them. But the things that man is doing, when he deals with things, he can send unmanned spacecraft up to land on the very surface of Mars and send back photographs of the Martian surface so they can see a photograph close up of what it looks like on the very surface of Mars. And they can understand so much more about it than they ever could with telescopes. And then we send other spacecraft comparatively close to Jupiter and to Saturn. And they send back photographs that the astronomers say are, almost brain-boggling. They see things they never understood. They didn't know were there before. And now we see it. And man can do those marvelous things. Think how wonderful is the computer. You funnel knowledge in, you program knowledge into a computer, and just push the right button and out comes all kinds of knowledge. You realize that you have a computer right in your own brain or with it. I don't know whether you press a button or how you do, but if someone would remind you of something when you were, say, 5 years old, all of a sudden back comes things you haven't thought of in all the years since you were 5 years old. It's been right there lodged in your memory all this time. Now, I'll give you something to shock you a little bit. That memory is not the physical brain. But I'm not going to describe that just at this moment. That's another subject. I have had a lot to say about it, and I will have more to say about it in the future. But it all gets down to a way of life, the way we live. And the fact is that we have let science and technology and industry develop the weapons of mass destruction that have brought us to the place where now either one or two men can push a button, or someone else could trigger the whole thing and start a nuclear war. A world war that can annihilate all human life from off this planet. You wouldn't be alive any longer, anybody else. And that is possible. And listen to this. Man has never yet invented a weapon of warfare he has not used. We have already used the atomic bomb. We blew up two cities in Japan and all of the people in them virtually. We destroyed them. Now the hydrogen bomb will blow up and do a lot greater destruction to a great deal larger city. And with a few of them, it is possible now to erase human life from off this planet. I tell you, we need to learn how to live. Now, how did we get this way? Humanity went along on a practically even keel. So far as what we had, and so far as what we think is progress is concerned, up until, well, say, 200 or 300 years ago, when modern science came along and began to invent new machines and new powers, new forces. And we have the power struggle right now. There's a great struggle about the new nuclear plants, commercial nuclear plants, and whether to use it for a nuclear purpose. There's a great problem now as to whether the presidential administration is going to favor it, and the commercial nuclear interests are quite disturbed and involved about it. And we've come along to that place, but we're thinking of materialistic things. We're thinking of what we can do with things, but we can't get along with ourselves. And as long as we can't, we can use the things we can invent to destroy ourselves. Now, the point I want to make is that dealing with one another is a spiritual matter. It is a spiritual problem. and we can't solve spiritual problems. But we can deal with and handle material problems, and we can deal with things. Where did it all start? You know, I always go back to the beginning. They say, now, there's that Herbert Armstrong going back to the beginning. You bet your life. I go back to the beginning because that's where it started, and where have we gone from there? Actually, life didn't come from that single-celled amoeba. The things on this earth required great design and great planning. They didn't just happen the way they are. Things don't work in nature the way they do just by accident, because they just happened by resident forces and not by any mind who did the designing and the planning. But there was a mind who designed and planned us. Now, back in the Bible, in the very second chapter of Genesis, the first book in the Bible, you read how the eternal God formed man of the dust of the ground. And he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. That's the breath that you just breathe in and out of your nostrils. Air. Plain air. And man became a living soul. Doesn't say man is an immortal soul. But the man made of the dust of the ground. What was made of the dust of the ground became a living soul. And out of the ground, now something else God made beside man out of the ground. Out of the ground made the eternal God to grow every tree that is pleasant to the sight and good for food. Now, a lot of our fruit comes from trees, cherries, apples, and things of that sort, and they're very, very delicious too. The tree of life also in the midst of the garden, and the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Now, there were two trees, one the knowledge of good and evil. And God took the man he had created and put him inside of this garden. He wasn't created in the Garden of Eden, but he was put in the Garden of Eden after he was created. And then God, the Lord God, said, verse 15, he took the man and put him into the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but there is one that was denied him. Of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. You will eat it in a day, then you will surely die when your time comes. It doesn't mean he would die that same day. And indeed, he didn't die that same day. Now, those two trees are symbolic, of course. I don't doubt that there were two literal trees there. They may and may not have been literal trees. You can argue that all you want. It doesn't make any difference. There is great significance in what they mean and what they are symbolizing. The tree of life simply symbolized the way of life. It symbolized the spirit of God. Man was born with a human spirit that an animal doesn't have, and that's why he can think in a way an animal can't think. That's why he can reason in a way that an animal can't. That's why there is memory stored up in a man, and he can recall everything that was programmed. And the minute you receive any memory through, or any knowledge, I mean, through your eye, or through the ear by hearing it, to the eye by reading it, or any other way that knowledge comes into your mind through the senses of smell or taste or feel as well, it is programmed in that spirit. And your mind can have instant recall of what has been programmed in that spirit, just like a computer. Oh, God formed a computer long before man ever did, and the computer is a marvelous instrument. But what God formed in man is much more marvelous. But man was made to need another spirit, and that is the spirit of God. And it was available to Adam. He said, of all of the fruit of the trees in the garden, you may have all of it, any of it, except the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That meant he could have had of the tree of life, the Holy Spirit of God. Man was made with a spirit. He's made to need another spirit that God alone can give him, the spirit of the living, eternal Creator God. But man took to himself the knowledge of what is right and wrong. In other words, he rejected the law of God, which tells him what is right and wrong, the way of give, of outflowing love, and decided he'd go his own way, and he has gone the way of get. I'll take what I can from myself ever since. Now that is a spiritual way that has brought us all of our troubles, that has brought us to every woe and every pain and every sorrow and every suffering that any human being has on this earth. All of the poverty, all of the starvation, everything of the kind that is going on in this world. There is so much more to this. I'm going to have to break off there. But let me ask you this question. Why did God put mankind on this earth? And as a result of that, you were born. And why? Why, then, were you born? You were born for a definite reason and for a definite purpose. Why humans were created? Where are we going? Is there any afterlife? What is the human potential? And how do we arrive at it? What is the way? How should we live to be happy? How could we have utopia on this earth? Is there purpose to life? And if there is, what is it like? I have a little book that I'd like you to have. It's captioned, Why Were You Born? Why were you born? What is the purpose of life? Is there a purpose that humanity has missed, that people don't understand? Wouldn't you like to know what that purpose is? There's no charge, there's no cost. We are not in it for what we can get. We are in the work, or shall I say the business of giving. And it isn't a business because it's not a profit-making business. We are giving. I'd like to give you one of these books, absolutely gratis. No follow-up. We're not going to ask you for money, not unless you voluntarily start giving money. If you do that, I might ask you for more. But unless you start, I won't ever ask you. I don't know anyone else that has a policy like that. But all you do is send your name and address to me, Herbert W. Armstrong. Herbert W. Armstrong, Pasadena, California. That's Pasadena, California. And 91123. 91123. And we'll be happy to send it to you absolutely free. Write and get that. And also subscription to the Plain Truth magazine, the finest magazine published on the face of the earth, a circulation right around 6 million copies now, worldwide, published in 7 different languages. So until next time, this is Herbert W. Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Herbert W. Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For the free literature offered on this program, send your request along with the call letters of this station to Herbert W. Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123.